My name is Nawakumig. I'm also known as Dennis Banks. I'm Ojibwe from the Leech Lake Reservation in northern Minnesota, and that's where I live.
My name is Rolando Bihill. I'm the National Coordinator for the Longest Walk Five, War on Drugs and Domestic Violence. My family comes from Taos, New Mexico. I've lived with my wife for the past 38 years. She's a Kumeyaay from Viejas Reservation in San Diego.
We began on February 13th in La Jolla, California. And we our destination is Washington, D.C. It is on drug abuse and domestic violence. Mm. And how it came about to be, why we're doing this walk this particular time, first of all, it's been in our communities for years and years and years. But when we were doing the diabetes walk, we were in Montana, and a young lady, I was talking about the diet, and I said, if you're not careful, that you're going to be chopping off your legs, and you're going to be doomed. And she said, Dennis, there's something much worse up here that we're afraid of. And she said it was meth. And other drugs, she said, and even prescription drugs. And then I said, well, maybe after we talked about the drug issue, and she said it was very bad on the reservation. And as it turns out, it is getting bad because in some cases, tribal councils are taking council action against those who are manufacturing meth on the reservations in northern Montana, and they're expelling them, and they're in some cases, they can't rent those homes out anymore because they've been making meth in them, and the children have become affected, and so they have to fumigate and clean and wash and practically sterilize the entire house again before they can rent it out. So that was basically, then the more I found out about it, and the more I began to realize how serious it really was, and we then decided to go, that this walk would be against drugs. At first, it just said drugs, declaration of war against drugs. But even in my family, on October 19th of last year, my granddaughter was killed by her boyfriend, and it was... It was very bad how the killing went down and what he mutilated her body after. So domestic abuse is really it is affecting our the very culture, our is at risk, the ceremonies are at risk, the traditional ways of living are at risk, and it just it's like we're in a sort of a monster storm of drugs that are killing us. So we have to do something then about it. And we're walking right now. We're walking across America. We're collecting information. This time we're taking data, asking a series of questions to the people that we meet, schools, high schools, programs where domestic battered women are at. We've collected about 300 survey questionnaires, and not asking their names, not asking for a signature. And yesterday we visited a juvenile offender's place in New Mexico. Where was that at? In Bernalillo?
No, it's in Albuquerque. It was the youth authority for the Arizona state.
And when we started talking about the culture, and we had a small drum there, and I sang a song and the women, they were just, one of the girls just burst into tears listening, and later on after, she said she realized now what she's missing. And she grew up in a traditional place, traditional home, and singing and dancing were part of her life. And now she's hearing an old song, and she burst into tears. So it tells me that the culture, even though it's taken a beating, it is still, to me, it'll still be primarily the answer that we're looking for. And that is that we may call upon our own culture and heritage to save us.
You know, you you had mentioned your granddaughter, and clearly that's something that all of us know about, and it has a real personal connection for you. And I would think that that personal connection resonates with people that you come in contact with.
Oh, it and, does. Yes.
And this walk must do something to help provide some healing in that.
It really is. I mean, I sometimes I tear up, and but listening to other young people, same age. She was 32. Some of the younger people are now even 18, 17, and now the young kids that were in, that we listened to yesterday. So it pains me to hear our future generation. The women are the girls will someday hopefully have a family, give children out, and then they will then understand what is missing if their children end up in places like where they're at now. So it hurts me quite a bit, and I'm glad that even at my age, I'll be 79 in a few weeks. I'm glad that I'm seeing this, because it also has been in my home. I mean, I had big signs, you know, coming up, driving up my driveway, that no alcohol or drugs permitted beyond this point, not realizing it. It was my own family. Some of them were violating that very sign that I put up. So in that, you multiply that probably about 500,000 homes across this country where it's happening. And from the guys that I've been talking to and the women, it's happening in their homes as well.
Mm-hmm. And is and kind of on a broader sense, I mean, is it something that you see at Leech Lake?
Yes.
Is it elsewhere and other parts of northern mm-hmm. Minnesota, I imagine.
Yeah. Ironically, I never, you know, drugs, I've stayed away from drugs, alcohol. I did drink at one time, but I quit in 1969 going into 70, New Year's Eve. Never went back, never looked back. So I didn't know. Well, I knew there was drugs, of course, but I didn't know what they did to. And so I turned to a friend of mine, Orlando, who is now our national coordinator for the Longest Walk 5, and he'll probably be there in there for the Longest Walk 6, 7, or 8, or 9, or whenever. So, but I didn't understand the language of the drugs, or what it did to the body. So I turned to Orlando, and he's done a tremendous job of coordinating information, coordinating events, and he, along with another person from California, Bobby Wallace, they are doing a tremendous job in keeping gas tanks filled and places to eat, and so much that I may have to call this the longest buffet. But so a lot of people, tremendous amount of support pouring out.
Good deal. Well, let's talk to Orlando for a second. And Orlando, this is a monumental undertaking, I think, logistically. But also, what do you see? What's the payoff for this? What kind of awareness does this actually? What kind of ripples does this make in the community?
Oh, this is making more than a ripple. This is going viral all over the United States and Canada and Mexico. We had some people from the Baja Cumiais came down and walked all the way through California. You know, the tribes got them a special passport to come across and to participate. This started out as a war against meth, but like I come from the meth capital of the world. It was the meth capital of the world at one time. San Diego, not only San Diego, but East County, where we live, where the reservations are. But the cycle has changed, and now they're on Xanax, Oxycontin. They're paying $500 for bottle cough syrup. They're mixing it with Sprite. They call it lean. They drink that, and then they got to come down just like heroin. The body aches, all the effects of heroin. And then when they reach bottom, then they're going to heroin. And some people, they don't reach bottom because they might have a lot of money. And some people do, and it's young kids that are good kids. They just started out taking pills, and they've gone to heroin. And the effects of this walk, like Bobby Wallace, you know, his brother OD'd on heroin years ago. And so this really resonates within him. Myself, you know, everybody says this is a good cause. We were the cause at one time. You know, we were cooking methamphetamine. We were like part of that problem that was going on, but I quit in December 12th, 1998. And I got a 10-year prison sentence for something else, not related to drugs. And when I came out, you know, my children were still feeling the effects of what I had brought into their lives. And my oldest son, he quit, and he's 2 terms as councilman, you know, and he's working for Vias Productions now. And my other son, Blue Eagle, he was with us on the walk all the way through Arizona. He came back and joined us in Zuni and walked with us to Gallup, you know, and spent his birthday with me, you know, and just to show he loved me. And he's been a little clean over 2 years, you know, probably soon, probably 2.5 now, you know. You lose track of time like that. But he was a rapper. It was AIM, Contents Under Pressure. And he was nominated for 2 NAMMYs. And so when I got out of prison, he was just always in his room with his headphones on, writing music, stuck in that world, you know. And one day we had a family intervention and for one of my nephews, and he said, "I'll go with you." And he went through that rehab. He stayed there 2 weeks. He got out. He said he left. You know, his aunt paid for him, but he left, and he's been clean ever since. He doesn't do no rap. His son wanted to be a rapper, following in his footsteps. You know, he was a leader of the community. Many kids were following him. But now he's strictly a traditional bird singer. So is his son. His son's in competitions. He caught his son and his daughter also. He caught them right before they became teenagers to be at that spot where they needed to be caught and taught and have a father, you know. He got divorced because, you know, his wife didn't want to quit drugs. So, you know, he's just been an asset to our family. You know, I drank a little bit, you know, not a drinker or a big drinker, but, you know, I had to stop that because it doesn't look good. I have to support him. I can't make my brother stumble or my son, you know. I have a son in prison doing 10 years, and, you know, he gets caught up with the drugs, too, and sometimes it's a lot of debt. You know, he's a big guy. You know, he ends up beating people up or having to go to hole or, you know, get out of the prison he's in because he owes money. And, you know, he's starting to get right. My other son, sorry to say, you know, he left rehab, got kicked out of rehab the other day, and, you know, I was just had a lot of hope for him, and, you know, I got a lot of love for that son because he bought me my dream bike, a Harley, when I got out of prison, you know, and that's what I ride now. And my son Pope, you know, I got a lot of love for him, but he needs to find that strength that, you know, that he needs somebody like me to talk to him. Like I talked to those kids yesterday. I asked him if there was gang members. There was 2 of them. And I told him how the gangs all started, you know. You know, the Mexican gangs, the Southsiders, the Sureños, you know, and how they're infiltrating over here, you know. And that one guy said, "Nobody's putting money on my books." And then I said, "Yeah, you have to stick with your traditions. You know, when I go to prison, I don't run with that side. I don't run with this side. I stay strictly Native. If I'm the only Native there, you know, and that's strength, you know, to be there and run that yard by yourself, you know, that takes strength. And those people that are after you to join that gangs will recognize that strength and they will respect it. And then they will leave you alone, you know. So I tried to encourage them and tried to encourage them to be with their families. But also that thought came to my mind that their families might be dysfunctional at home. You know, maybe the way my family was dysfunctional at one time. And so I told them, you know, you have to be that leader to change your family. And I told them, you know, do you guys get phone calls? They said, yes. Call your parents and tell them you love them. Not that kind of, I love you, you know, can I get some money on the books? I love you, you know. Not that kind of love you, but I just called to say I love you. And they were just at the edge of their seats. We talked at the University of New Mexico to 2 11th grade classes, and they were at the edge of their seats, and they were just really listening. And, you know, I'm still kind of like in shock over all this because I'm realizing how much knowledge I have and how I can speak to these kids and and their lesson, you know. And I'm going as far as Clayton County, and then I have to go back to San Diego and continue national coordinator stuff over the phone. And, you know, I've been doing the coordinating for Arizona and a lot of New Mexico, too. And we had Yolanda Begay from New Mexico come to Arizona and help us through part of New Mexico. But, you know, these coordinators, they need to be right there, but many of them have jobs and things like that. Our state coordinator in California, I was state coordinator for Longest Walk 3, and Julie LaBrake, I was showing her what to do, and she was with us the whole route, you know, and you have to be there. You have to show the people how to get through your state, because Dennis isn't from California. He's not from Arizona or New Mexico. You have to have a local guide you, and locals walk in with you. And we've been getting great support, you know, the Zunis and the governor of Santa Ana, and all the tribal leaders in California. They're in great support. I don't even have time to get on the national page, but the Southern California page is still going strong. Bobby Wallace is just doing an excellent job. I just can't even explain how good of a job he's doing, keeping this going on the internet. I've been posting every day, you know, a blog. This is what we're doing today. And we have so many shares and so many likes. And it's just like, you know, the media wasn't there in San Diego, you know, but we'd be doing radio stations in Taos, Portland, Oregon, and Gallup. You know, we're here now, and we need that media exposure. We're hoping for national exposure. But, you know, when we get to one state where we can, like, kind of stop, like in Arizona, we were 2 weeks ahead because the coordinator had us running the whole way, and we were like 2 weeks ahead, and we couldn't go into Zuni because they had ceremonies. So we found this place to just camp out at a lake. The county supervisor came out. The local people came out. They brought us wood. They took us to a fish fry, and it's just been like exceptional support. You know, one of the runners ran to a lady at a restaurant whose son was in prison for drugs and trying to kill his wife. So there was both aspects right there of what we're walking for. And we told those kids yesterday, you know, we're doing this for you. You know, we're doing this because we love you. And, you know, and that one girl, Regina, told one of the girls, you know, you girls are beautiful. And I think that's what really set off the tears with that song, to have somebody tell her that she's beautiful, you know. And it's kind of saddens me that I have to go back, but sometimes you can't, you know, go and save the world without saving your family. So I'm trying to kickstart this off. We have Larry Bringingood that's going to join when we reach the Texas border, and he was on the Longest Walk 3. And then we're going to, me and Bobby Wallace are talking about renting a van and joining them when they go to South Carolina, because we have local boys, Tony and Wendy, Simon, Adrian. I don't want to forget anybody, but there's some boys from San Diego that are going all the way, young people.
Yeah. Now, one thing you mentioned, and I think both you and Dennis, I mean, your personal stories are kind of probably what resonates with people, and that's probably the part that makes a difference. So you're probably talking to a lot of people about your own personal experience.
Yes, you know, and sometimes we want to cry, you know, when we're talking about, you know, what we're doing and why we're doing it, and you know, my daughter wanting to commit suicide and talking about suicide. And one of the girls that we talked to yesterday, they told us that she hung herself and that they revived her. They found her hanging in her cell. And maybe that love will just maybe keep her going. And you know, she said, my tribe does longest walks, you know. I'm Miwok, you know, from California. And, oh, that's Wounded Knee. You're his people. He does those walks. He was with us, you know. So it's just love, you know, and respect for them, you know, as individuals and as Native children, some of them living in urban areas where they're away from their tribes and their culture and their language, and they might have an identity crisis, you know.
Yeah, and Dennis, one thing that occurs to me, too, I mean, this is, you're no stranger to coast-to-coast physical effort, doing that. You've been organizing this for years, and I think that it seems like you've channeled a lot of that early energy that you had with the early AIM movements and Wounded Knee into this very determined mostly centered around physical activity and getting people out and raising awareness for causes.
Yep, that's been a lot of. I've been doing a lot of that, and but I can't. I'm as I said earlier, I'll be 79 in a few, and I just can't keep up the pace that that Orlando has, and I think it's it was time to turn the reins over, probably 3-4 years ago. But we did it, and then. I wanted to do the 30th anniversary of the original Longest Walk, which was in 1978, and I didn't realize, I didn't think that I'd ever last that long, I mean, that I'd be alive to do the second annual Longest Walk. So now this is our fifth one. I've now walked across the country 7 times. This is my 8th walk. Orlando is, he's very... He can talk to these kids because he's went through that. And I think that's very, very important in trying to get through that. Like those kids might have just a little small window, they'll let you in. But when Orlando talks, then the window kind of opens up a little bit. So now they're wanting to talk more. And we're doing surveys. As I said, we're going to have quite a few surveys when we get to Washington, D.C., and the surveys are telling us right now that some of the kids have started drugs as early as 7 years old. I mean, they didn't start taking it and just become addicted, but that was their first, somebody coaxed them into trying it at 7 years old. And one of them actually was my son. He says, Dad, I have to admit that I was only 7 when I first tried marijuana. He said, but it didn't do anything to me, so I just kept away from it. So if they're getting it that old, then I know that we have a deep problem. At the schools have got to start, you know, they got to understand what a big responsibility they have, because we're entrusting our kids to get educated by them. But when they're when drugs are being brought into the schools, and this is not just the reservation now. When I say drugs are in the schools, it's in every school across this country. So what do we do then? I think that this walk, by the way, this can be a 3-year operation. This will be the first walk. The second will start at Alcatraz and then go through the middle states. Then the third walk in 2018 will then go to Yakima and visit some 30 some tribes in Washington State, and go through the northern states and going through Montana. And I'll be glad when I get back to Montana and see that same family and say, well, yes, we're doing something about it. So we have a long crusade, so to speak, that's ahead of us. And I may not see the end of it before I go to the spirit world, but I think that we will put it on the table, and I think the more that people put it on the table and start discussing it, I think then that's half the battle, because we're finding out now a lot of women, it kind of puts shame on them, put them in a state of shame because they were beaten up by their husbands, and they, you know, some and that happened in my in-laws also. But one lady came and told me that she saw the domestic abuse in 4 generations of her family, and her mother told her that what she had saw with her grandparents. So in their 4 generations, there's been terrible abuse, and she said that to herself, "I just know it's not going to happen in our family." And she married a very wonderful guy. And for 2 years, they were going along, living, and they had a kid. And finally, he lost his job, and then the drinking started, and then the abuse. And during a period of about 5 or 6 months, he had attacked her and beat her 3 times. And finally, she decided she didn't want to go any further, and And she told him, she said, it's not going to happen. Please, it's not gonna, I'm not going to let it carry on. And she ended up killing him. And a jury found her not guilty because of the pattern of abuse. So it's her, and she said, Dennis, I still love him even though he's in the grave. She says, I'm not going to get married. You know, it doesn't matter to me because, yes, I entered that violence, and now my two children know that it's not going to go any further. So we're battling that as well. And there were many elderly women who said, Dennis, we wanted to speak as well too, but, you know, we're too ashamed of what happened to us. And so that's, we're getting a lot of stories like that.
You know, despite the subject matter and the very serious topics that you're tackling, what you're doing it in such a positive way, and you're making such an impact with the communities. Is this the future of activism?
Well, it is for me anyway, and I hope that Orlando will continue on, and I'll still be senior advisor to the longest walks that happen. So, but the younger generations are coming up. I mean, they're middle aged, but I think Orlando and Bobby Wallace and a lot of young people are out there. They want to get involved because of, they see Orlando and they see what he's doing. You know, he was a res rider, and young people are attracted to motorcycles, but he's not using the motorcycle as a way to get them in. It's his history. It's what he's been through already. And when I first met him, by the way, he was in prison. And I saw, for the first, you know, I saw him, he organized the powwow in there. And for the first time, they had buffalo stew inside of a powwow that Orlando had made happen. So I seen this. And then many years later, him and his girlfriend, they got married at the Sundance that I was at, and so we've been friends for many, many years.
Both of you are so open and willing to speak about difficult subjects. I mean, I'm wondering if this is something that clearly you recognize the need for it. Do you see that this is something that's not happening in communities?
Yes, I do. And, you know, one of the ladies in California, and it might have been the state coordinator, Julie, she said that, you know, we can't just be an example in our kids' lives. We have to be involved in our kids' lives. And I know my son, Graybuck, he's involved with all his kids' lives. My granddaughter, Silent Rain Espinoza, is going to be a Washington Husky. She's got full medical scholarship. She's only in 10th grade. She's had her verbal since 9th grade. And these are the kind of things, you know, that are going to steer them in the right way. My grandson, Zosip, is in New York right now with a chaperone touring, you know, the city, getting off the res, seeing what the world is about. But he's also been athlete for the past 2 years, got awards as the best athlete. And then my grandson Eagle, he just won a championship in basketball for Viejas Reservation. So, you know, this is what we have to do, is get the kids involved like that. And when we were in Cibicue over there in Arizona, they have a gym that's it's condemned, and it cost $800,000 to fix that gym. But it would, for $1.2 million, they could have a brand new gym. And there's nothing for the kids to do except drugs, because there's no gym, there's no intertribal sports, there's nothing like that to get them involved. And these are solutions that are working, not only that, but the language classes.
Yeah, okay. I'm actually out of questions. We've got more than we need, but is there something that I didn't ask you that you need to talk about here and to tell us about?
I think there's many questions that'll surface even after we leave. Say, oh, I should have said that. So, but I think we've touched on the issue with you, and I think that's what's probably the most important thing, is that we get this on the air, and if people want to join us, they can join us now. If they want to help. They can. We have a funding source, GoFundMe.
GoFundMe.
And we also are inviting long distance runners to come join us. Even if they can join us just for a week, you know, that'll take some of the relief off of our runners. So, and or else if we got a lot of people coming to D.C. And yesterday and day before, we were joined by one of the great Bobby Unser Jr.
Junior. Yeah.
He was driving me around. I couldn't believe it. I used to watch him on television, you know. But here, his whole family, here they were out. He says, "I'm interested in this walk. I want to help it." So there's a lot of people out there that are gonna come to Washington D.C. So it's all people. It's out of school year, so it's time. You know, July. Why don't you come and join us?
And they want to add Orlando V. Hill on Facebook, or the Longest Walk, War on Drugs and Domestic Violence. They could do it that way. Bobby Wallace has a GoFundMe account for us. And we have a girl coming from Colorado to run a week with us because it's going to be a long way from Albuquerque to Santa Fe. A lot of miles to cover.
Great. Well, we're certainly honored to have you come by today, and we really enjoyed the talk, and thank you very much for what you did.
Thank you.
Thank you.